You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
We welcome you to Jordan Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
It's the Wishbone Podcast, your source for Auburn football discussion and commentary. Here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer.
Hello and welcome to the Wishbone Podcast, brought to you in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, another national signing day is in the books, and I think we can call this one somewhat successful. What do you think?
From an Auburn perspective, absolutely.
Yeah. We certainly got pretty much most everybody we wanted. There were a few kind of top blue chippers that were always kind of a flip of the coin or a roll of the dice, and we got, you know, a couple of them and flipped some we weren't expecting and didn't get some we were, so I guess tonight the main topic on our agenda is to just sort of look back at National Signing Day and just sort of dissect it all from our perspective. Now, we know that many of you, you know, follow National Signing Day and can get this information, have been looking at this sort of stuff all week since last Wednesday. So we're just going to kind of dig through it from our own perspective, talk about what it means for the future, what we should be able to expect from this group, how the current team stacks up now that these players are, you know, coming on board, and maybe just give you some things you wouldn't have found in your typical article or something. We'll see what we can do on that score. So where should we begin talking about National Signing Day, John?
I guess to me the first part of National Signing Day is what was your thought process kind of in the 24 hours kind of leading up to it, and then during the day, how did you receive information during signing day, and what were kind of the ups and downs of the day for you?
Yeah, and then you can do the same. All right, so yeah, my thought process in the 24 hours leading up to it was, man, I hope my students don't mind me continually checking Twitter on my phone during class, because if they have a problem with that, it could be bad. No, I kind of checked out here and there to actually focus on class, and then I would come back as soon as the class would be over. And I was pretty much looking at Twitter. Occasionally I'd open up a web page and see what's going on. In fact, I pretty much kept the AuburnTigers.com page up just because, you know, everything we're seeing on Twitter was happening in real time, more or less, but the Auburn page had the official, you know, the T's have been crossed, the I's have been dotted kind of thing, which, for example, Byron Cowart didn't show up on there until almost the end of the day. Whereas, yep, you know, he was announced when he made his announcement. So, and we'll certainly get to that as we go along here. So, yeah, I was mostly on my phone on Twitter. I about ran my battery down during the morning on Wednesday. And then, I guess I was just trying to be as pessimistic or realistic, because all pessimists say they're realistic, of course. I was trying to be as pessimistic and realistic as I could be going in so that I wouldn't be disappointed, because honestly, just the wind seemed to be blowing in the last 48 hours leading up to that Wednesday. The wind seemed to be blowing towards Gainesville a little bit. And I was starting to feel like maybe instead of getting the package deal of all those guys coming, we were going to get the negative package deal of all those guys going to Florida, you know?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So what now, tell me how you went through it.
A lot of the same stuff. I mean, as you mentioned, the important lesson for signing day itself is, you know, bring the phone charger.
Yeah. That's the truth.
But we got some big news the day before, where we had the receiver commitment flip, Slay flip from Georgia to Auburn.
Darius Slayton, yeah.
And that was a big deal, you know, because we needed another big receiver, and he had been committed to Georgia for a long time. And so that was, you know, that was kind of a boost of good news and kind of gave me a good feeling heading into signing day. And then, I was at work, and I was a couple times in the morning, I was in meetings and I couldn't look at my phone and that was a challenge.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
It was, you know, it's one of those, you have to use your willpower to resist.
Yeah.
And just, you know, focus and do the work. And then we have a break later, we check Twitter and see what's going on. And then the other thing is I saw that the, you know, Auburn.com, the Auburn official Auburn website did a full like 6-hour show.
Yeah. I watched a good bit of that. I actually did watch a good bit of that.
With the radio guys and Cole Kubelik, and it was great. I went and I watched a little bit of it later, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was well done, and made me wish I had like taken the day off and watched it from home. So, you know, there was a whole, you know, I felt great in the morning once a couple of big commitments came in, and Byron Coward and a couple other guys came in for Auburn, and I was like, yes, you know, we're in great shape. Things are going, you know, once we got him, I was dancing around or whatever, and then. You know, as the day lingered on and his facts didn't show up, I was starting to get a little nervous. I was never like panicking or anything, but you know, we've been through this before on signing day with some other players who flipped Alabama and stuff, and so I was starting worried, and and then eventually it showed up and we were okay. So
yeah, the thing about The thing about their 6-hour show, they came on the air at 6 o'clock in the morning. I was watching it on my iPad while I was brushing my teeth and shaving and everything. And the thing about it that I think was puzzling to some people that maybe they didn't quite understand. So if you were puzzled about how that thing went, and there was some criticism of it on Twitter. Let me just kind of fill you in. The guys on the 6-hour AuburnTigers.com video thing that was including. Like you say, the radio play-by-play guys. It was Stan White and Rod Bramblett.
Sure.
And they would have like a third person every now and then come on. And the thing was, that was the official university production. You know, that wasn't like Rivals or AL.com or, you know, somebody speculating or saying, you know, this person has just verbally done something. No. That was purely Auburn University. And so what was happening was, like, you know, Byron Cowart went on and made his announcement that he was coming to Auburn and put the hat on. And if you were watching AuburnTigers.com at that whole time, you were seeing an interview with Tim Jackson from the ticket office.
Mm-hmm.
And people are like, what are they doing? And I'm like, they can't talk about Cowart till the fax comes in. You know what I'm saying? Again, this isn't ESPN where they can just say, oh, I think this is going to happen. This was Auburn University official. So they didn't put Cowart's picture up there until the fax was in the machine. They didn't talk about him until the fax was in the machine. You know, so it's not that they didn't want to talk about these things. It was that they couldn't because they were the official organ of the university. And we're kind of limited. So that meant that it turned into a lot of boring interviews, unfortunately, for Rod and Stan.
And if you're an official Oregon University, you can't comment on recruits before they sign. Otherwise, it's a violation.
Exactly. So they had to just pretend the whole Byron Cowart thing wasn't even happening. They couldn't say a word about it. But I think a lot of people just in the emotion of the moment just maybe didn't understand. You know, they're like, why are they ignoring all this? Well, because again, this wasn't a news broadcast. This was like, you know, official. So they couldn't. So. Yeah, it was kind of odd, and they ended up having like a long conversation with the baseball coach and like the swimming coach, and it really just kind of turned out to be like a 6-hour infomercial for the university. If you were looking to that video for your news, you were looking in the wrong place. unless it was somebody that had already sent the thing in early. You know what I'm saying? If the guys that sent their facts in at 6 o'clock in the morning, yeah, they were talking all about them. That was great. They were showing highlights and everything. So that was cool. And, you know, the two things that kind of occurred to me about Darius Slayton announcing the day before, or at least saying on Twitter, there were sort of two negative things I felt that way. One is I was afraid, well, gosh, I hope this isn't coming out now to soften the blow of us not getting anybody tomorrow, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out it wasn't, so that's good. And number two, when he said that, I remember thinking, I hope this isn't like our consolation prize, like I hope – you know, I was thinking, well, we're getting him, we're not getting Godwin. And of course, that did turn out to be the truth, was that we got him and didn't get Godwin. So
that's right.
But that was kind of, I think, a long shot. I mean, but you know, and one more thing while I'm talking about Godwin, not to just go on and on, but I think these are good points that when Godwin announced after dragging it out all the way to 5 p.m. on Wednesday, or I guess 6 p.m. in Georgia, he dragged the whole thing out, not just to signing day, but to the end of the day on signing day, like almost the last person, although nobody's going to break C.C. Jefferson's record, but almost to the last second. Mm-hmm. And then he said, oh, I'm 100% Georgia. And he had the family had T-shirts that said 100% UGA. And I'm thinking, if you were 100% Georgia and there was never any doubt, why did you make the Georgia fans suffer all the way until 5 o'clock on signing day? I mean,
to be on TV.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you do that when you're not sure and you're kind of like still making up your mind at the last minute. You don't decide 100% weeks earlier and then and then just wait till the very last second to throw the cold water on one group and the warm on the other. I mean, that just seemed odd to me, bizarre.
I think some of those kids do that kind of stuff either for their own attention or for so their school and their community can get some attention because they're the biggest thing that's happened there in a while. So,
well, it just seemed kind of strange to me to wait till the very last second and then go, oh yeah, I'm 100% have been and never wavered. Well, then what are you making a big deal for? Why didn't you commit 6 months ago? Like Chandler Cox, you know, or something, or Kerryon Johnson. They committed and then went to work recruiting, you know, and stuff.
That's true.
So you really kind of, you know, I don't know. Anyway, that just struck me. So, okay. So, I don't want to just retread the same material that I've heard other shows doing because they've done a good job of it. We're coming along kind of a few days later in our regular time slot. So I'm trying to think what particular noteworthy things do we really need to kind of hit on here as we kind of get into how signing day played out.
Well, I think that's it for terms of the time sequence of it. But let's talk about the players then. Who out of the signees are you particularly excited about? Who are you excited to see play? And then who do you think will play immediately versus who do you think will be a redshirt and not play anytime soon?
All right. Well, let me just roll up the roster here. By the way, I've got several little things I want to hit on as we go along. I'm going to mention one right now while we're talking about bringing those Florida guys in. You know that the Florida people are kind of melting down over how things played out, at least early. It gets settled down for them a little bit later, but they were upset. But did you see Jeremy Foley's quote the last day or two about Muschamp? Mm-hmm. Yeah, for those that don't know, CBSSports.com has an article, Gators AD addresses Will Muschamp recruiting against Florida. And I love this. Here's what Foley says. I'm just going to read real quick just the gist, okay, the central part. He says, at the end of the day, we terminated Will. It's not like he moved on his own. We terminated his contract and said that we need to go in a different direction. He's free to work. He's free to go get a job, and he's free to do his job. I imagine Auburn was recruiting some of those guys before he got up there, and Will is a good recruiter, but also so is Jim McElwain. So he says, we're fine. It's a good conversation. It's angst on the part of Florida fans. But we terminated Will's contract, and he's free to go make a living like anybody else. I thought that was a very good quote by Jeremy Foley, a very realistic quote, which is like, you can't fire the guy and then expect him not to work for his new employer. That's just ridiculous.
That's right. You could have kept him, and maybe you would have gotten some of these guys. But
yeah, and they're complaining they're paying him money while he's doing this. Well, if you didn't want to pay him money, you shouldn't have given him a contract like you did, that you have to pay him. You know, you're paying him for what he did in previous years and for his commitment to stay with you if you didn't fire him. You're not paying him not to recruit for his current team.
That's right.
So, all right. Well, let's look at the roster here. I've got it broken down by position and then our current overall roster. We have 15 seniors, by the way. Let me just point this out real quick. Well, actually 16. They've recalculated, I guess, in the last day since I looked at this. When you look at our current roster, John, you look at our seniors.
Mm-hmm.
we're going to lose 15 or 16 guys, but honestly, I mean, some of them are really important role players, but we don't lose a whole lot after 2015. Before we get into the new guys, let me just quickly run through the guys we're going to lose into this season, okay? Are you still with me?
I'm here.
Yeah, let me run through. This is some of the seniors we're going to lose when this coming season is over. Duke Williams, we know, but we're lucky to have him back this year, so we can't really, you know, that's fine. Ricardo Lewis, certainly. Jalen Denson, Jonathan Wallace. I mean, you know, we love Jonathan Wallace, but he doesn't destroy the program when he leaves. You know what I'm saying? Xavier Dampier, we're already working to replace him. Devontae Danzy, Devontae Lambert, Kamiya Harrell, Casanova McKenzie, and Chris Frost. We almost lost them this year and got some replacements for them coming in already, obviously. Anthony Swain, Justin Garrett, who fell off the earth after his foot injury. Kenny Flowers, Jonathan Jones, who's kind of emerged in the last year or so. Josh Holsey, and Derek Moncrief. That's it. That's who we lose after this year.
If no juniors leave.
Right. Well, if no juniors leave. Right. So just think about that, though. I mean, that means that 2015, we've got all those guys. And when 2016 rolls around, those are the only players, again, like you say, notwithstanding any juniors, those are the only guys we have to do without next year. That's pretty good, isn't it?
No, we're going to be in pretty good shape. I mean, I think obviously we have a very, very talented team in 2015. And obviously we had another – you got another great class after this one. You had a 2016. It's going to be one of the most talented Auburn teams ever.
Yeah.
I mean,
we'll lose, you know, I hate losing McKenzie and Frost, obviously. And Duke Williams, and it goes without saying. But, you know, other than them, I just don't really see anybody that we just can't roll another guy in there, another 4 or 5-star guy in there and keep plugging along.
I think you're right.
I mean, because we'll have – you know, because look at our – and here's our – again, I don't want to drag this out too far, but in our junior class, the guys that will come presumably come back after this fall, Jeremy Johnson, Javon Robinson, Alex Kozan, Tony Stevens, Marcus Davis, Sean Coleman, Avery Young, Jordan Diamond, Robert Leff, Will Adams, Elijah Daniel, Jamel President, Montravius Adams, Maurice Swain, Javier Mitchell, TJ Davis, Joe Turner, Cameron Melton, Rudy Ford, and Devereaux Lawrence. Now that, to me, is a class.
Yep.
That's the one we're going to take a step back when we lose, you know, somewhat. But they're all coming back unless they turn pro.
I mean, and I would say out of that class, the only guys you really have to be afraid of are Montravius Adams and Javon Robinson and maybe Sean Coleman.
Well, I don't want to lose Jeremy Johnson, but we got guys behind him too. So.
He'd have to have an insane season to go.
You mean turn pro, right?
I'm talking about going pro this year.
Yeah. And I understand that's kind of your focus. My focus is on
Your focus is on what's the roster going to look like in the 2016 season.
Who's going to graduate? I'm just looking at who's graduating this year, who's graduating next year, and what do we have left? And my main point is our senior class of 2015 are some good guys, but they are hardly irreplaceable for the most part.
But
that's a very good thing. My point was,
at the end of the 2015 season, we'll lose those seniors.
Yes.
And whatever juniors go pro, which could be
Javon
Robinson and Montravius Adams. So
that's
a long way away.
Right. Well, for right now, though, 2016 is looking like we don't take any step back. And in fact, we'd probably take a couple of steps forward. So, all right. Well, let's see. Here is our freshman class. And let's just kind of run through them. I think they're listed here in the order that they must have sent their paperwork in or something. I'm not exactly sure. So you want to just kind of run through them one by one? Or how do you want to do it?
I don't know if I could say something insightful about every one of these kids, honestly.
Well, let's just kind of run through them. We'll see.
All right.
We'll see. Tyler Queen at quarterback.
The only quarterback we signed, and, you know, we're in great shape with quarterback already
on
the current roster. And so, you know, he's a guy that's clearly you think he's going to redshirt. And, you know, you hope in the long run he's going to be fighting it out with Sean White for the quarterback battle.
Yeah, you got to think that Sean White is the backup this fall, right? And then
if he's not the starter.
Wow. But it's going to be Jeremy Johnson. Let's don't even pretend.
I've got to tell you this. I emailed you this, but I want to say this on the podcast. I just finished Bruce Feldman's book, The Quarterback. And it's really interesting. It's about the development of quarterbacks and how they go to all these summer camps and work with all these professional tutors like that George Whitfield guy,
right,
that Coach Cam and is on ESPN all the time. And they go through – one of the things they focus on is the Elite 11 camp that Trent Dilfer runs now. And the year they focus on it, there's a lot of really big-time quarterbacks there. And a guy who really comes through and is the, you know, maybe the best quarterback in that camp, is Sean White.
Sean White. Yep. I remember that. I remember when that happened.
And that was before even at that camp when he shined. It was really before he was committed at Auburn. But
yeah,
there was a lot of big name guys in that camp, and he played better than them. So that gave me a lot of, you know, I didn't know a lot about him before that. It gave me a lot of confidence in him.
Right. Well, I mean, did he redshirt last year or did he burn a year? Let me see.
He redshirted.
Okay, so that's fine. Then he can back up Jeremy for 2 years and have 2 years to play while Tyler Queen backs him up. So that's cool. Let's see. Well, Kerryon Johnson obviously is going to be a big-time piece of the offense. Everything I'm hearing is offense. I was waiting to hear what they were going to say in terms of would he play safety, would he play – running back, you know, he's apparently so diverse in his skill set. He can do so many things well. And everybody just raves about him, you know?
No, I mean, everybody who's seen him play and everybody talks about him. He's been compared from a running back perspective to Darren McFadden,
mm-hmm,
played at Arkansas, played in Malzahn's offense at Arkansas. So that kind of size, speed combination.
Holy cow, that's pretty amazing, man.
Yeah, I mean, and McFadden was a guy who, you know, could have been the first pick in the draft at one point.
Right, right.
So, you know, he's a guy I think is going to make an immediate impact, even if it's just, you know, returning kicks and running the ball 10 times a game on sweeps and that kind of stuff. I think he could be a really explosive player and make an impact as a freshman.
It's just hard to imagine that we could lose our two starting running backs from last year and be vastly better at running back this year.
I think it's really possible.
But I think it's possible. I know.
I mean, I love Cameron Artis Payne and Grant. They did a lot for us and they were really, really productive players, but I am not losing sleep about running back at all.
No. All right, I'm going to run through a few more. Like I said, I'm going to run down the list, but we can just talk about the ones that we have something significant because I'm going to spend all night. Chandler Cox is the new fullback, right? I mean, he's supposed to be, to some degree, replacing our beloved fullback of 2013.
Prosh.
Yeah.
And he's really more of an Eric Smith kind of guy than a Prosh. He's not as big and strong, but he's a true fullback.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's, you know, we didn't have that guy on the roster last year. So we didn't run a lot of those formations that we did with Prosh or Eric Smith. And I think those are all going to come back. And Cox is also an early enrollee. He's on campus now. It'll go through spring practice. So
that's awesome.
I think he's going to play a lot. And I think without the threat of the quarterback running, Cox is going to be important for blocking and open up the running game.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah. He'll be a big asset not only for the running back, but for Jeremy.
That's right.
Jalen Harris, I guess that's the tight end.
Yep. Tight end, young tight end,
big, tall, yeah,
rangy guy, got a lot of ability, but you know, it's a position we're going to need some people down the road. So
yeah, yeah. Well, that's always an iffy position for us, you know. I mean, sometimes we use them like a slot receiver, sometimes we use them to block, and you kind of have to be good at a lot of things, and it's hard to find somebody that can really play that position well for Gus. We talked about Darius Slayton, the receiver, legacy from Daryl Crawford, I believe, wasn't it the linebacker? Let's see, Ryan Davis, Caleb Kim, Markell Harrell, Tyler Carr, Bailey Sharp, lots of good folks there.
That's all those guys in a row basically were the offensive linemen you were talking about.
Yeah.
And we didn't get, you know, kind of the marquee offensive lineman, the big tackle that, you know, that we wanted out of Florida or some of these other guys. But I think what we got is a lot of these guys are excellent players. They were in the, you know, the Army All-America game or the Under Armour All-America game, and they made a lot of plays. You know, they were great players in high school. And I think all those guys, you know, Carr and Sharp and Caleb Kim, those guys are excellent players. I think they're going to develop. They're going to probably get a red shirt this year. We don't need him right away. But that's, you're looking at the core, you know, the offensive line for the next couple of years in that group right there.
Isn't Mike Horton one of them too? Isn't he the guy we flipped from Florida the day of?
That's
that was
right.
Pretty nice.
So, I mean, you know, you've got a good group, a good solid group of five or six guys there. And you can figure, you know, you need like four of them to come through and be the offensive line of the future. And I think we could definitely do that. So
let's see a couple of big defensive guys. Byron Coward, obviously, he's been talked to death. He's going to be, I mean, he's, you know, he's the solution to a lot of our problems. When you, if you can roll, if you can roll
Lawson,
well, I can never call his name. I can't call anybody's name. I just have a mental issue with names. Yeah, if you can roll Carl Lawson out there on one end and Byron Coward on the other, you got to think our defense just suddenly becomes a whole different deal from last year.
Well, those two guys and Muschamp coordinate the defense.
Yes.
It is 1,000 times better.
Yes.
And, I mean, Coward's not going to play every single play, but he's going to play like Lawson did when he was a freshman and come in on, you know, third and long and go get the quarterback. And he can do that.
Yeah.
He's a stud.
Yep. He will fax the quarterback in a few hours later is what he will do. Flat and black and white and blue. Prince Tega Wanago, in addition to all of our presidents and other royalty we've had, we now have an actual Nigerian prince. I mean, this guy, you know what he's going to do. He's going to go out there. He's going to, once he gets his leg healed up and once he really learns the game, he's going to go out there and he's going to be on them like an email telling you to invest money in Nigeria. He's going to tear you up like that virus would tear up your computer is what he's going to do. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they're going to make from him.
Maybe the guy, just because I love guys with high upside, maybe the guy I'm most excited about in the whole class, just because I want to see what he can do. I think you can just forget about him for now because it's going to be, you know, he's going to redshirt this year and probably not play next year. And maybe, you know, 2 years from now, 2016, he'll be playing a good bit. But I think he could come out. He could be one of those guys who you don't hear about for 2 years and then he shows up in 2016. He's a, you know, an all SEC level defensive lineman. So I'm very excited about it.
Well, and I'm just wondering, is it going to be like Eddie Murphy in Coming to America where he's got like a, like he's got Arsenio Hall following him around with a drink, like a little drink with an umbrella in it or something, you know, and a fan. So he'll be out there at practice and there'll be like a guy standing next to him with a fan and a drink for him. That would be awesome.
I don't think so.
I'm totally expecting that. I'll be so disappointed if that doesn't happen. All right. Jeff Holland obviously is a big, big catch. We kind of felt good about him all along, but still, you never know how it's going to work out.
And Holland is the guy who we haven't had a linebacker who could get after the quarterback in several years, and he's that guy.
Oh yeah. Oh, our
A Dansby kind of guy who could get around the edge, Marcus Washington, and cause some heat on the quarterback, and we need that bad.
We, you know, all the years we had Joe Witt, we always had such good linebackers, and it's just been so sad to see Auburn's linebacker core drop off the cliff in the last, what, 6-7 years, I guess?
Mm-hmm.
We've had a few. Josh Bynes was awesome, you know, and we've had a few here and there.
Craig Stevens was solid.
Yeah, oh, yeah, we've had a few, but we used to have three or four.
Mm-hmm.
Put them in the NFL every year. There's still guys playing in the NFL that were great Auburn linebackers.
That's right.
So, yeah, it's but, yeah, I hope we're seeing that day dawning all over again. Darrell Williams is an example of another one, right? I mean, he's going to step in there. We got Trey Williams, Darrell Williams, Jeff Hall. I mean, the linebacker core is getting a lot healthier. Richard McBride. A
lot of good young talent there.
Carlton Davis. We got a lot of Davises. I mentioned that on Twitter. We got like three Davises in this draft. Ryan Davis, Carlton Davis, Javarius Davis. And we're working on Stephen Davis Jr. How cool is that for down the road? Let's see. Jeremiah Denson, Jordan Colbert. Which one's the punter?
Well, that's Ian Shannon is the punter.
Okay, there he is. Yeah.
These guys are the other guys, Carlton Davis, Denson, Javarius Davis, Jordan Colbert, Tim Irwin are all defensive backs.
Yeah.
And they're all corner safety.
We sure needed that.
We do. I mean, Carlton Davis is a guy that was committed to Ohio State. He's a really good player. And now Colbert is a big safety.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things I love about Muschamp and Tavarius Robinson coming to Auburn is, you know, Muschamp has turned players into NFL safeties. He had Earl Thomas at Texas, and he had Matt Elam at Florida. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you remember Elam, but that was a guy people were scared to go across the middle against him.
Oh yeah,
I mean he annihilated people. Yep. And we haven't had our safeties to intimidate people.
Right.
You know they took the wrong angles. They're bad at tackling. They weren't that physical. And I think, you know, these guys coming in, you know, guys they specifically pick because they, you know, they like what they can do with that stuff. And I think you're going to see a gigantic improvement in that position.
The other ones I didn't get in real quick, just so people won't think I don't know or left them out. Tim Irvin, Montavious Atkinson, and Jontavious Johnson.
Yeah, that's a defensive lineman.
There's some great names in that crowd. Yeah. So
and Ian Shannon, who
the punter, right?
We talked about punting being a problem a lot last year. He could come in and be the guy, maybe.
Yeah, free up our kicker to kind of focus on kicking. That would be a very nice thing. So
it would be nice.
Let me see. I also want to mention because this kind of went under the radar. Well, a couple of things. One is I pointed out we have the number one player in the country in Cowart. We have the number one JUCO guy in Javon Robinson, and we got the number one Mr. Football in Alabama in Kerryon Johnson. That's not too bad for one class.
Nope.
Pretty
darn good.
Three number ones. The other thing is, remember, we got several guys coming in that have either transferred or been injured or whatever, and so this class is even better when you add those guys into that same list. I mean, there's Trey Matthews coming in from Georgia as a safety. There's the Golson kid from Ole Miss that gets to play this year.
Who wouldn't have started on offensive line for them last year. He's a good player.
Oh, absolutely good. He's 4-star at least, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's, of course, Carl Lawson coming back that we didn't have all of last year. I mean, that's – and there's one more I'm forgetting. But
Alex Kozan.
Oh, Alex Kozan, right, if he's okay.
Who's an All-American guard 2 years ago.
So that's potentially four big-time players – none of whom we had available last season, and none of whom count as part of this recruiting class.
That's right. Well, and I'm going to give you – there were 11 other guys we redshirted last year who were like basically four-star guys, four- and five-star guys the year before who didn't play last year.
Hit me.
All right. Sean White.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know he can play.
Oh, yeah.
Cameron Petway is another big running back who's going to work, you know, compete with Chandler Cox at that position.
In the H-back slot, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Chris Lay is a big tight end, which is another guy we need in that area. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of receivers, Stanton Truitt, Myron Burton. Mm-hmm. Truitt, I think, played one play. Markel Boston is also maybe going to play there. And then a couple of defensive linemen. Andrew Williams is a defensive end that I think could come in and play some next year. Justin Thornton, Dontavious Russell, or defensive lineman, that could, you know, Russell's a tackle. They could come in and play. You know, we're missing a lot of guys in that in the middle of the defensive line. And then Deshaun Davis is a linebacker, and Calvarez Besant is a cornerback who's a 4-star cornerback last year. I think could come in and play next year and immediately. So, it's not just the freshmen we signed, you know, last week. It's those guys, plus the injured guys, plus the transfer guys, plus the redshirt guys. And you add all those guys together, and, I mean, Auburn's roster is in great shape. We have a lot of very talented guys, and I think there's a lot of positions where we're very, very strong.
Yeah. Look, so young in some places, but with so much talent. I mean, look at tight end and H-back, what you were just talking about. All four players – at tight end and H-back are freshmen or redshirt mm-hmm. freshmen, all four. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty amazing, isn't it? I mean, that's Cameron Petway, Chandler Cox, Chris Lay, and Jalen Harris, all freshmen or redshirt freshmen. So, and look at this. When we're talking about the linebackers, this is another thing I noticed that jumped out at me about the linebackers. We have 12 linebackers on the roster. But of the 12, five are seniors, so this is their last year, and mm-hmm. four are freshmen. Only three total linebackers, sophomore and junior class combined. That pretty much – it's like we didn't even try to recruit for 2 years to that position.
Mm-hmm.
One junior linebacker on the whole team, Javier Mitchell.
Yeah.
I mean, is that just bad recruiting those years? They just didn't get anybody? I mean –
I think it's, you know, also the roster was different then. The defense was different. We only played two linebackers, so they didn't have to recruit as many. In the old system that we ran under the old defensive coordinator, we only needed two linebackers, so we didn't have to have as many guys on the roster.
Well, it's pretty amazing. You know, if the coaches told these recruits, you'll come in and play early, they better believe it, because if they don't get on the field this year, there'll only be seven linebackers on campus next year until they bring in the next class, you know. So, So only if you're a, and put it this way, if you're a freshman linebacker at Auburn right now, there's only three guys ahead of you once the seniors leave.
That's right.
That's amazing, isn't it? I mean, dang. So you're gonna get playing time.
That's right. And again, with Muschamp in charge now, don't assume that the same players are going to play on defense. I think they're going to throw it wide open, and if whoever the best players are, they're going to play them.
Yeah.
And if one of the freshmen turns out to be the best player in a certain position, they're going to play him. Or if one of these guys are redshirted, they're not going to be locked in to whoever they were before. They don't feel like they owe those
absolutely.
Guys anything.
So. Absolutely. All right, the big question, what freshman are you most excited about? And should we include Byron Coward in this, or should we say he's fair game because there's somebody else?
Sure. I mean, we can put him in this because obviously I'm incredibly excited about him. I love defense, and I love, you know, when Auburn's defense is good, and we couldn't get to the quarterback last year. And I think he's going to, you know, he's an exciting player. I mean, watching his highlight tapes and stuff, I got excited about the future of that position in Auburn football. So
who besides him then?
I mean, to me, once you get past him, and I mean, the two obvious ones are he and Mr. Football in Alabama.
Yeah.
But, you know, to me, I look at some of these other guys. I look at some of the big the defensive backs where we've been so weak for so long. Somebody like Carlton Davis. Colbert is a big safety. I think he could be, you know, really physical. And then, you know, like we talked about the problems at linebacker, a guy like Montavious Atkinson or Darrell Williams, they could come in and be very physical, solid, productive linebackers for Auburn for years to come. And I'm excited about those guys. So,
well, I'll tell you this. I will say up front the caveat that I understand that it's the defense that really is going to carry the day, because, you know, whatever pieces Gus has, he's going to make a decent offense out of it. Mm-hmm. He can, you know, he can make lemonade out of some pretty bad lemons. So what we need is defense. So I understand that Cowart and Holland and those defensive backs, just anything better than our defensive backfield last year, you know, anything's better than that. I get that. That being said, I guess the player that I've really just been the most enamored with from the beginning is Kerryon Johnson. I just can't wait to see what he can do, because I mean, everything I've read and heard is that not only is he just so good, but he's a good guy, you know?
Yeah.
And so I just really want to see him get out there and show off, you know, light it up. That would be outstanding.
Well, and we didn't even really talk about Javon Robinson, who's, you know, considered part of this class.
I just start chuckling evilly when you mention, every time you mention Javon Robinson.
I mean, we didn't really talk about him, but he, you know, he's the number one junior college running back in the country. He's a much bigger running back we've had recently. And, you know, we're going to have much more of a power running game with him back there and a fullback in front of him, and a big quarterback in there who can run the ball, or, you know, who's a much better passer. And I think, you know, our offense is going to be really, really tough to stop. So
I'm going to repeat what I always do when we talk about him, which is that his numbers last year were half of what they were the year before. But we have to assume that there were reasons for that, and that he's going to step on the campus and just step maybe right into that starting running back spot and just blast holes in the opposing defenses. I was the last couple of days watching a little bit of our SEC championship game against Missouri. And when you watch Trey against that Missouri defense, and then you think about our running backs this past year, it is night and day. I mean, again, no disrespect to Cap, certainly. And Grant was a different kind of runner, so we didn't expect that. But my goodness, I mean, Trey hits the line, and having seen a year of the running backs in 2014, I think, okay, well, this is a one-yard gain. And suddenly Trey is 8 yards down the field, falling on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is what was missing last year. If we convert a few of those, you know, running downs that got stuffed for no gain or for a loss, and, you know, you have a Trey Mason out there that's getting 6-7 yards when there's nothing, you're the whole team changes.
That's right. You wear down the other team, and it lifts your team up. You keep the ball away from their offense.
Your defense isn't on the field all the time with those defensive backs getting exposed much. Man, so yeah, if Robinson alone can just step in and blast some holes in the defensive line, that would just make a huge, huge difference, a huge difference. As big of a difference as somebody like Cowart and Lawson will make on the defense.
That's right.
So,
I mean, I want to say this about the defense, though, while we're talking about it. Yeah. I mean, to me, the addition of Muschamp and the coaches we have on that side of the ball, plus the talent we already had, plus these new guys coming in, you know, and the addition of somebody like the guy, you know, the guy from Georgia, Trey Matthews.
Yeah.
You know, there is plenty of talent on defense for Auburn to be successful. And I think it's not quite a, you know, going from our old offensive coordinator to Muschamp. You know, it's not quite that bad.
Right.
But it is going to be a dramatic upgrade defensive coaching.
He who shall remain nameless.
Well, I mean, we could say, you know, you know who I'm talking about.
We all know. We all know. All of our listeners know very well.
Mr. Leffler. But
yes, yes.
I'd say Mr. Leffler. But I think it's good. I mean, because Ellis Johnson's a really good coach, but you could clearly see in the second half of the season that something was going on there. The communication wasn't working. Players were freelancing too much. Guys were getting dumb penalties.
Yeah.
And they didn't play up to their potential. And I think that's what we saw in the offense under Leffler. They clearly had talent but didn't play to their potential. And I think you're going to see the defense play much closer to its potential under Muschamp. And I think it's going to be a huge difference, and that's going to make the whole team so much better.
There was an interesting article by Joel A. Erickson today about how Tim Ervin really kind of signals where they're going to go with the secondary. He's not maybe quite as tall as some DBs, and he's not somebody that our previous staff was even really looking at. Mm-hmm. But they're saying he's tough. He's a hitter. He's a tackler, and he's strong and stout. And that's not kind of the DB that, you know, that Ellis wanted, but it is kind of where what T. Rob and Muschamp want, and it represents kind of a change in philosophy. So I think that's very interesting, kind of to see where that's going to go when we're getting some more big hitters and tough guys and enforcers in our secondary.
Well, and you got to have guys as teams spread you out more. You got to have guys who in the open field can tackle somebody and make a play.
Yeah.
Or go up against a big receiver and hold their own.
Yes, absolutely. Let's see. Any other areas of concern about the or excitement about the new recruits before we get into our other features before we wrap up tonight?
I mean, I think in the, you know, a year from now when we get to the next recruiting day, I think the biggest obvious areas we got to go after again are defensive tackle and offensive tackle.
Yeah. Those were clearly the deficiencies in this class, if you can find that. I mean, that's right. What made this class a strong A and not an A+, is that on the interior of both lines, we didn't get maybe the guys we wanted, but we got everything else in excessive, you know. So
that's right.
So yeah. Yeah, gotta get some big Nick Fairley types in there to plug in the holes in the middle, and gotta get some more road graders on offense. Other than that, I mean, we should be stocked going.
That's right.
We got a new video board coming to Jordan-Hare Stadium. How exciting is that? I mean,
I'm very excited.
Anything makes the game day experience better and gets butts in the stadium and not sitting at home, you know. I don't have a lot of choice about it. Neither do you most weeks. But
that's right.
But those that can get there need to, and this will help.
Well, and I think, you know, the old video board had been there a long time.
It doesn't seem like it had been there a long time.
I know. To you and I, it doesn't. But it had been there a long time. And I think, you know, we had talked about before, we'd had discussions about we don't need to expand the stadium. There's no need, or there's not like a backlog of people trying to buy tickets. We don't need to add 20,000 seats. What we need to do is upgrade the stadium experience for the fans that do go.
Yeah.
And the video board would be a big part of that. And I'm excited. I mean, I thought they would do something, but I didn't think that we're going to have the biggest board in college football.
Yeah, that's amazing. 200 feet wide. It's two-thirds of a football field wide.
It's gigantic.
Good Lord.
So it's going to be so huge. And I think it's going to be so nice, you know, for the fans that are there. They could show highlights from other games. They could show the replays. And they could really, you know, you thought the video stuff was nice before. I think it was really pixelated and stuff compared to what we're going to get out of this. So I think it's going
to
be awesome.
They need to show like Avengers or Star Wars or something on it.
Well, I know a couple of people were talking about playing this, you know, like Super Smash Brothers or video game on. I think that'd be great too.
So. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, other stadium renovations, anything coming that I think can kind of make it nicer. I it makes me want to get back down there. It's kind of funny to go down there to watch TV, but yeah, it kind of makes me want to go down there just to see it, you know, at least once. So, especially since, dang it, they're doing it again. Every time they have a game up here in my area of the country, they put it on a stinking Thursday and make it difficult for my family. They, you know, last year it was Kansas State. Mm-hmm. We didn't talk about Coach Snyder swiping one of our players at the last minute.
No, we didn't. That was surprising.
Yeah, yeah. Coach Snyder was busy tonight and couldn't be reached. But he's going to come back and see us sometime during the off season, I think. So as soon as the Pony Express delivers him down here. It was a Thursday night for Kansas State. We had to take 2 days off of work. My wife did. My kids had to miss 2 days of school to go to a football game. That's crazy. And so now they're playing at Kentucky, which is another, you know, it's only 4 or 5 mm-hmm. hours away. We can get over there. And it's going to be on a Thursday. So I'm just like, I got to draw the line, you know, and say I can't be missing 2 days. And my kids can't be missing 2 days just to go to a football game.
And that stinks.
Oh, so it's very disappointing. Very disappointing. At least I will be at the game in Atlanta. If everything goes according to plan, I'm going to be back at Dragon Con for like what must be my 18th year or something ridiculous, and like 8th as a guest. So I'm looking forward to the Louisville game, assuming I can get a ticket from somebody. Let's see, a couple other things. Cody Parkey. Did you hear what Cody Parkey did?
I heard his shoes went in the Hall of Fame. What did he do?
He set the scoring record for an NFL rookie with like 150 points or something.
Cool.
Yeah, it's amazing. He had to hit like 3 field goals in his last game, and he went like 3 for 3. So he got them and did it. So he joins Coach Craig, who has his whole uniform from the Scottish Claymores, or is it the Amsterdam Admirals?
I
can't ever keep those two straight. The Scottish Claymores, the Amsterdam Admirals, they both have a long and storied history of professional football, and sometimes I kind of get them mixed up. But remember, Craig had the most yardage ever in a professional football game.
That's right.
And his uniform's in the Hall of Fame, too. So that's pretty cool that Cody Parkey and Damian Craig are in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Who'd have thunk it?
I mean – I'm very happy for Parker. He was a really, really reliable kicker for us, and I'm glad he got a chance in the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
yeah, it seems like our kickers never seem to make it in the NFL, except for Al Del Greco and maybe Ryan Byronis there, the late Rob Byronis. One other thing I promised that I would mention real quick, I'm just trying to squeeze this in while we have time, before I get to the factoid of the week, is I had mentioned on Twitter a couple of times this UAB business. And you know, Twitter's just been all eaten up for the last few months, understandably, with UAB people complaining that they got their football program shut down. And I saw an interesting take on it from a friend, and it wasn't published anywhere, so I couldn't really forward it or anything, but I just mentioned a couple of the theories. And you tell me if you have any thoughts about this. You may not have any thoughts about it, and that's fine. But they were saying that basically, and it pertains kind of to us through by way of Alabama, that the theory is that the University of Alabama at Tuscaloosa, UAT, wants to go from their, you know, when we were in school, we had like 22,000 students at Auburn. Alabama was like 17, 18,000. We always had a bigger enrollment at Auburn, and we had a bigger stadium. Remember that?
Yes.
Okay. Alabama has a bigger stadium than us now, and they got a bigger student body because we capped enrollment at 25. So mm-hmm. Auburn sort of decided we like our stadium this size, we like our student body this size, and we're not going to get any bigger. That's fine. Whatever works, whatever. But Alabama is heading toward 35,000 with a goal, it is believed, of ultimately getting up around 50,000. Now, that seems sort of bizarre to me, but that's apparently what they want to do. And the story goes that they can't get that kind of enrollment of undergrads as long as UAB and UAH are siphoning off a large number of freshmen from around the state that would otherwise have to go to Tuscaloosa. So what they're trying to do is the board, the Alabama board, right, the trustees, is slowly dismantle everything at UAB and UAH that would draw freshman students in so that they'll have no option but to go to Tuscaloosa. And they basically want to just leave UAB as a medical school. And I guess UAH is like an engineering, you know, aerospace school. And all the freshmen have to start out in Tuscaloosa. And so this was like the first in a long stage plan. And that this president, Watts, he is the president of UAB, but he serves at the pleasure of the Alabama Board of Trustees. And the theory goes, he is a creature entirely of Tuscaloosa, and his actions are not done for the benefit of UAB. They are done for the benefit of Tuscaloosa as the head of UAB. So he's not taking actions to help UAB. He's taking actions that are dictated to him by Paul Bryant Jr. to weaken and dismantle UAB. What are your thoughts, if any, about that?
I mean, the UAB issue has been kind of beaten to death on Twitter over the last couple of months. But, I mean, on some level, it makes some sense. I get it. They want to grow and they want to hurt UAB. I think the other part is, again, that, you know, unless you're at the top, college football makes a lot of money at the top levels. At the bottom levels, it doesn't make a lot of money.
Right. Costs a lot of money.
It costs a lot of money and you lose money. Most of the schools, you know, the Division I schools and the lower conferences, you know, are breaking even or losing money.
Yeah.
And so I understand that part. I mean, some of that is a financial decision, but there's other parts to it too about what you include and how you count it and what the value is of a athletic program and stuff. So, it was sad the way – the biggest thing was, outside of whether you agreed the decision to do away with it or not, is the way it was carried out was not the best way to do the process.
No. Well, it makes me grateful that we're not part of the same, you know, oversight crowd that Alabama, UAB, and UAH are, because I don't want those people having any control over our, you know, situation. It doesn't – by the way, it also doesn't help that Paul Bryant Jr. runs Alabama and that runs that board – and he has a very tight relationship with Governor Bentley, who was the team physician for Bryant's dad.
Sure.
So anything he wants is going to get rubber stamped by the governor, and there's not going to be any opposition in his way. So, you know, when you start looking at all the pieces, you can start putting together one of those things on the wall with the red yarn tying the things together. You know, you can do that real easy with this. And you just don't want Auburn to be anywhere on that wall. You know, in you know how it is in Georgia, you being a native Georgian, you know that everything in Georgia is under that Board of Regents. They decide everything for everybody.
Yeah.
And I'm glad we're separate. We're not part of that, you know, under the aegis of that one big crowd. So they were saying that basically Bobby Lauder is nothing compared to what Bryant and that crowd in Tuscaloosa are. So, oh boy. A couple of things real quick. Oh, I got Factoid of the Week. Hit it. Factoid of the Week.
Factoid of the Week.
Factoid of the Week.
The Factoid of the Week this week, I'm just going to throw a couple of things at you real fast. I was reading The Economist, as I do occasionally, being a political science and history professor, and The Economist had an interesting article this week. It's probably still out in bookstores and libraries. If you guys want to check this out, you might find this very interesting. It's talking about how football has gotten more and more dangerous, or at least we're figuring out more and more how dangerous football is. Mm-hmm. And their argument was that football in a few years to come will go the way of like professional boxing, where it will go from something that dads watch with their kids to something that's only like in Las Vegas, you know, and pay-per-view and stuff. And so the idea is they're saying football will be extinct as a major sport in a few years because it's becoming so dangerous and it's going to be harder to get players to play it and young people to play it and all that. I kind of see that in a way. I kind of understand where they're coming from, but I just don't think there's any way that's going to happen because there's just too many people. I mean, the NFL is the biggest sport in the world, basically, or right up there with the premier, you know, the British Soccer League. And college football is the second biggest sport in America now behind pro football. So what do you think about that part of this first? Then I'm going to throw something else in.
I do think that's really possible. I think the way football is played now, the players are so large and so fast that the amount of damage they're doing to each other in the football field, even when they hit each other legally, mm-hmm. is just immense. and it's much more than it was 20 years ago. I mean, the techniques were different, and they did a much more things that were, you know, much more dangerous 20 years ago. But everybody weighed 50 pounds less and ran, you know, half as fast.
Yeah.
So you really, really weren't hitting each other that hard. And now it's, you know, it's much different. And I do think that there's going to be, you know, there's going to come a day when there is a absolutely definitive long-term study about the number of concussions in football and the amount of damage they're doing to people. And I think already probably there's been a decline in enrollment of youth in football in America. And I think that people are being concerned about it. I think safety equipment is going to get better and better, whether players like it or not. And they're going to, you know, sometime they're going to have to be forced to wear stuff they don't want to wear that because it slows them down or whatever. But I mean, I think there is a danger there that, you know, not anytime soon, but like 30 years from now, 40 years from now, we could have a situation where football doesn't exist in the form that we have it now.
Well, hopefully we'll have good robots by then that can play for us.
There you go.
I mean, throw out some, you know, throw an Android team out there. But of course, then they'll form a union and demand robot rights, and we'll be right back where we started. But no, seriously, I mean, but you know, it's funny because you see that, but on the other hand, the money now is so huge. I mean, you know, we were just looking earlier at the coaches' salaries. I remember it wasn't that long ago when it was a huge deal that Steve Spurrier got $1 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
And Nick Saban now makes $7.1 million a year. Kevin Sumlin makes $5 million. Les Miles, 4.3. How does Hugh Freeze get 4.3 million? Hugh Freeze makes more money a year than any coach except Saban, Sumlin, and Miles.
Wow.
Okay. Then Brett Bielema, 4 million. Richt, 4 million. He's stealing money. Spurrier, 4 million. Gus is in the lower half. Okay. Gus is in the lower half at 3.8. And then Butch Jones at Tennessee, 3.6. I just got to tell you, Hugh Freeze makes more money than Gus Malzahn and Butch Jones.
You know what that says? He's got a good agent.
Oh, my God. And then get this. Well, there's Dan Mullen at the bottom at $3 million, which is still a lot of money. Would you have ever believed that the head coach of Florida would be number 12 on the list of how much money the coaches make? McElwain makes 3.5, below Mark Stoops at Kentucky.
That's what he deserves right now. I think, you know, if he goes out and has a couple of great years and Florida wins the East, he'll be up there. But, no, I mean, that's his market value. So,
wow. Actually, I would imagine that Vanderbilt's at the bottom, but they're not included here because they don't disclose, you know, their numbers because of they don't have an athletic department or an athletic program. All right, let me see. What else? Other things?
Ready for some questions?
Let's see. That was just sort of my pseudo factoid of the week. So let's hear some listener questions. Yeah, do we have listener questions?
We do. We have a few. Our first one comes from Riss, who's at @guru_Riss, who says, who will be the offense's number two wide receiver next year?
Oh, God. We
know who number one is. Who's number two?
Well, we've got 10 on the roster, so you got to think it's either Ricardo. We talked about this kind of last time, right? Either Ricardo Lewis or Marcus Davis, I guess. I mean, do you think Jonathan Wallace will have much of an impact at receiver like Cody Burns did, or will he?
But you're talking about who's going to be the number two guy we throw the ball to.
Maybe Jalen Denson comes back. I mean,
I don't know about that. I think it's much more of a chance that it's, you know, Ricardo Lewis, you know, Marcus Davis. I could see Stanton Truitt.
Tony Stevens.
Maybe Slayton even. Mm-hmm. If we need another big receiver like Coates that could go down the field, another just kind of home run guy. So maybe him. But I would put money on if I had to bet, I'd put money on Marcus Davis.
Well, I think the thing here is that the receiving core is more unsettled than it's been in quite a while, but it'll shake out. So,
but I think it'll be a case. We're going to throw the ball more next year, and I think, you know, we're going to distribute it around. But I still think Duke Williams is going to put up numbers like Amari Cooper did this year. It's going to be big numbers for him.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. Well, with Jeremy throwing him the ball, presumably there'll be more accuracy to a certain degree. I mean, Nick was great, but you know, this should have more, a little more passing accuracy, I think, will make a big difference for Duke.
Yeah. All right. And our next question comes from Emily Rios, who says, hey. On the heels of signing day, it appears Auburn's class is very strong. What areas do you think are still an issue depth-wise?
Yeah, defensive tackle, I guess, is the main thing. But you need more depth in the secondary, certainly. I mean, one good class helps, but, right?
That's right.
You want a few more.
Well, I mean, I think that, and then you look at receiver, and it's like you were saying, there's four seniors.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's right.
And then Jalen Denson, you know, is one of those, and you're not sure about him. So really, you know, we're going to bring in defensive tackle is number one priority next year, and maybe offensive tackle, you know, a guy that could back, you know, replace Sean Coleman or somebody. But after that, I would say another solid group of receivers you got to bring in. So
man, yeah, I mean, this is what we'll have after this year: Tony Stevens, Marcus Davis, Stanton Truitt, Myron Burton, Ryan Davis, and Darius Slayton.
That's it.
Wow. So yeah, you need more receivers, more bodies, more warm bodies.
Mm-hmm. All right. Our next question comes from Jonathan Harris, who's at AU Zoom. And he made a joke about, will Alabama now claim their 15,000th national title after signing day?
I assume they already did, yeah.
But they put the banner up?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And he says, on a serious note, is this Auburn's best recruiting class ever?
I've heard that question asked a good bit. I mean, it's the first time anybody can remember us getting the number one player in quite a while. And certainly like the number one player on signing day that comes in immediately. I mean, you can look at like a Cam Newton after the fact or something, but you know, and I think Carl Lawson was number two in a lot of services.
Yep.
But it's hard to argue. I mean, the thing about this class is not just that it's like the number one class we've ever had or something, because we actually had a class that won service ranked number one a few years ago, 3 or 4 years ago. The one that had all the big offensive linemen and everything, remember?
Yep, yep.
But it's that this one is so balanced that it has just about everything we needed. I mean, it's a very, very good class overall, but it's also a very broad class, you know?
That's right. There's a lot of depth. And the other thing is, you know, a lot of times you have these recruiting classes, you have a few stars at the top, and then you have, you know, 10 guys at the bottom that you aren't going to contribute probably. And that's not the case in this class. I mean, like you're saying, there's a lot of quality talent.
So. All the way across. It's things we needed and good players at all the things we needed pretty much. So, yeah.
That's right. So I think that's the biggest thing. I mean, man, you know, you can't – this is the best class ever. You have to look at that stuff retroactively, like 3 or 4 years from now, go back and look and see – how many guys have made an impact, but
yeah,
but it, you know, it's up there.
It certainly is.
It's in the top two or three.
What was the numbers we were looking at earlier? Didn't we, that there was like that this current group of 4 years of players has like the highest star ranking and since what, Pat Dye?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about? You mentioned something about this earlier. We were emailing. It's like if you aggregate all the star rankings and all of our players on the team right now, it's higher than it's been like since 2006 or something, and maybe even going back to die.
Yeah, I think the average of the number of what the players' ranking is basically will be the highest, so the most talented team we've had basically since. Really kept track of this stuff. And that would be like since Dye left in 1992.
That's amazing.
So the most talented Auburn team since then.
Good grief.
So like 1 to 85.
And just think we bring in another class like this next year.
That's right.
Oh my gosh. All right.
And, you know, combine again, most talented team Auburn's ever had, combine that with better coaching on defense.
Oh, better. And the whole coaching staff now. I mean, look at the coaching staff. It's just incredible. I mean, the sad thing is with our cross-state rival happening to be the dynasty of the country the last few years, we kind of have to be having our greatest years ever just to compete in our own state.
That's right.
It's ridiculous, but it does raise our game, doesn't it? I mean, if our cross-state rival was Vanderbilt, we could be like Tennessee right now, but our cross-state rival is a team that forces us to have to be, you know, top level for better or for worse, I guess.
That's right.
Any other questions?
And his last question is, what were your most surprising or disappointing schools on National Signing Day? Like,
Who surprised you how well they did or how they didn't do well? Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't believe Florida was like 55 going into National Signing Day. I mean, you got to think that McIlwain, I don't like him, but he'll do better going forward. And I guess it was just a transition, and we swiped a bunch of their guys, you know, they headlined up. But I mean, that's just surprising to see Florida 55th going into signing day.
That's right. And I'm sure they'll be better. They signed CC Jefferson today. But I mean, come on, they got a long way to go.
And I guess probably maybe the one that got a lot of buzz on signing day was UCLA, maybe doing well.
Well, I mean, I think you look at SEC teams. I mean,
Tennessee had
Tennessee
a very
is
good.
Probably the one that you always think Alabama is going to be up there, but Tennessee is the other school that I mean they already had a ton of talent. On that raw of young talent, and they had another great recruiting class.
Yeah,
and it helps. Like the number one defensive tackle in the country was his dad went to Tennessee, and he was going to go there no matter what. So, but you know those guys can recruit, and they're building a base of really talented players. And that roster now, their roster of 185, you got to think, you know, they have as much talent as you know anybody in the East, Georgia, or Missouri, or South Carolina. So.
Well, yeah, let me tell you the thing that really is, to me, an area of concern going forward, and that's that Ole Miss and Mississippi State had really big recruiting days, and Texas A&M got better with Chavis and everything. Why is that a problem? Because the white meat, as we used to call it, is going away. The whole conference, except for Vanderbilt, is getting really hard to chew. You know, the tasty morsels that you swallow with a swig of beer or Coke or something are turning into tough, gristly birds that try to fight their way back out of your gullet. And so, I mean, you just can't take a Mississippi State or an Ole Miss for granted as a win anymore. I don't like that. It makes it harder. I mean, here we are trying to compete with the Alabamas and the LSUs and the Georgias, and we turn around and the guys in the rearview mirror are tailgating us.
It's true. I mean that. Listen, Texas A&M is going to be better.
I know it.
They hired a good coordinator, and they've got a lot more talent.
Well, they're the closest similarity situation to ours, which is they had a good offense, and now they're going to bring in a good defense, kind of separately to kind of address both sides, and that's exactly what we're doing. You know,
I think we have more talent on defense than them, but yeah. You know, that Miles Garrett guy is that absolute monster. Miles Garrett may be the best defensive player in the whole SEC next year.
Man. All right. So, any other points before we move toward the conclusion tonight?
No, the last thing I wanted to do was kind of run around and we talked about Chavis, but kind of throw a couple other things out in terms of the coordinators that got hired during the SEC, especially the West. I mean,
okay.
I don't know if you noticed, I saw that Tennessee hired a guy as their offensive coordinator who was basically been out of football for a couple of years in an administrative position at Michigan.
Yeah, that's odd. But, I mean, I guess it's somebody that Jones is comfortable with. It kind of makes sense. But still, I mean, it's just an odd hire, I guess. But and then, so was LSU getting their defensive coordinator.
Well, yeah, they got Kevin Steele from Alabama. You know, I don't think anybody's really fired up about
Athlon called it, quote, can only be considered a major step down, unquote. Ouch.
I think that's how you got to look at it. I'm sure that they have a lot of talent on defense and they'll be fine a lot of weeks. But, you know, Kevin Steele doesn't scare me.
Well, so. Another quote I really enjoyed was on the Athlon article about the assistants. Was talking about Brian Schottenheimer replacing Mike Bobo. Bobo's been the butt of a lot of our jokes over the years, and rightfully so. And they say this is a step down from Mike Bobo. If that's what should be on your tombstone, is this is a step down from Mike Bobo. Good Lord.
Well, you'd say that, but Bobo was the last couple of years has been excellent.
Yeah,
I mean, their offense has been really, really good the last couple of years. And there was times in specific situations he didn't run the ball like he should, but they're going to miss him.
Yeah.
Their offense is going to be – that's another situation that's going to take a step back.
I hope so.
The other one, we talked about Mississippi State. I mean, they lost their defensive coordinator to Florida, Jeff Collins, who was really – I thought he was really good last year. He was one of the reasons they were really competitive. And they replaced him with that Manny Diaz guy who was there before and was good and then went to Texas. And he had one good year at Texas and then he sucked.
He imploded at Texas, absolutely. So – Well, Yeah, it's certainly going to be interesting. I mean, this conference just reloads bigger and stronger. It's an arms race. I mean, it's like the Cold War with 14 United – well, Vanderbilt. It was 13 United States and the Soviet Unions. I mean, it really is. It's an arms race. And you just have to wonder how much, you know, they can spiral up and up and up before it explodes. So – all right. Well, we're about out of time for this week. We can carry over any other thoughts into our next episode coming up. What have we learned tonight, John? I'm not even really sure. I have to think back. My head is swimming with all these names of the rookies and the coaches and the salaries and all that.
I think we learned that, you know, we got a lot of good players, and Auburn fans should be pretty happy with this roster and excited about the team going forward.
Yeah, I think I know I must have said something funny somewhere along the line that I could play back now, but I really can't remember. But yeah, I think that in all seriousness, I think what we've learned is that the future is bright.
That's right.
The future is bright. We got the staff now. We got the players. We know from over and over experience. I mean, when we were younger, we thought this kind of thing would go on forever, you know. But you and I know now that within 2 or 3 years, something's going to change. You know, Muschamp may leave. Mm-hmm. Gus may leave for the NFL. You know, you have to strike while the iron is hot, and you have to enjoy this in the moment, because you have no idea how long these sorts of things, these sorts of chemistry sets can go on. So I want to enjoy every moment of 2015, and I want it to be the year that we all hope and think that it can be, because you never know, right? You just never know what'll happen, what the future holds. So
that's right.
All right. Well, let's look forward to 2015, and meanwhile, we've got some shows coming up in the off season. We'll be having our match game show coming up. That should be a blast. John and I were just talking about maybe doing a historic Auburn basketball episode where we kind of look back at some of the great Sonny Smith teams from back in the 80s that went on the great runs in the tournament. We'll talk about that a little bit. So we've got some good ideas for things coming up. We're going to try to get maybe Brandon on again, or maybe talk to Joel Erickson, get them on the show, talk about what they kind of see with Auburn football and Auburn overall, since they're actually down there every day, you know, living in it. And we'll just see what other things we can come up with to entertain you until A-Day and beyond. So don't forget, if you haven't already, pick up Decades of Dominance, Auburn Football in the Modern Era by John and me. And there's also Season of Our Dreams about the 2010 season. If you like the James Bond movies, John and I have been doing an ongoing series of about 6 episodes at the White Rocket Podcast, where we're going through the different James Bond movies. So there's a lot of good stuff out there you can check out that we're involved in. That's over at www.whiterocketbooks.com, and it's our sister show on Podbean, Podbean. So we're going to get on out of here. Maddie's going to give you the information on how to find our various stuff. So our time is up, and we thank you for yours. John, War Eagle.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.